What is up, everyone? Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast with my co-host David Damerill. On today's show, segment one and segment two are about Summer League, and segment three is about the latest slash the not so latest, because nothing's happening on the Colin Sexton front. We'll talk about all of that today and more. I want to thank you, by the way, for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. The music you heard on the way in, at least in audio form, is from our friends at Astral Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify, and check out some of their upcoming shows in the greater Cleveland area. Check out them on Instagram to find the show dates. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs in the NBA for places like Dime, on UpRocks, and Espation Fear the Sword. My co-host is Evan Damerill, primarily at Facebook's Write Down Euclid. Evan, we're going to start talking today about Summer League. The Cavs are 1-1 in Vegas. They beat the Spurs. They lost to the Nuggets on Sunday. They play next on Wednesday at 5 p.m. against the summer version of the Charlotte Hornets. So I think where we have to start here is Cavs first round pick Ochai Agbaji feels like the headliner for us as we're dissecting what we're seeing in Las Vegas, or at least from afar because we're not in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's definitely the player who stands out most. I think that's the player you really want to observe. And I know folks are going to point out that his shooting numbers aren't the best, but I think if you're the Cavs, there's positives from the Ochai Agbaji experience thus far. He is not afraid to shoot it, which is always a good thing. I think you're seeing a variety of his shot profile too, where he's just not taking three-pointers like you saw in the game against the Nuggets. He failed sometimes, but he was trying to drive to the basket and use some of that athleticism and physicality to his advantage. I think Mike Garrity mentioned during pre-Summer League media availability that they wanted to use Agbaji a little bit as like a secondary playmaker, sometimes like just as a player who could like drive and kick or just make the extra pass. And like you saw a little bit of that against the Nuggets. Obviously the three-point shooting is the biggest allure though, but I don't think people should be too worried. At its core, Summer League is a glorified scrimmage. I think people taking too much stock from these wins and losses and shooting numbers when maybe guys aren't going full tilt when they have guaranteed money behind them is a good thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland maybe lets him play like another game, maybe a game and a half, and then they just shut him down for the remainder of Summer League because there's no point in him getting hurt. But Agbaji has looked good, like I said, and also just the fact that he, on fast break scenarios, like runs to the corners right away, like you saw with Isaiah Mobley getting the ball and like just kind of his extra pass to Agbaji in the corner. Like, there's a lot of good things from Agbaji so far that is positive momentum builders, is how I'm going to phrase this heading into training camp later this fall.
Yeah, I think the template of what we're seeing him do makes a lot of sense. Like, he's coming off of pin downs, he's sliding up from the corner and pulling up. There are some pull up threes you're seeing him take. And I think like that is stuff, and the willingness to shoot is really what's going to earn him minutes, if that's going to be in the cards from day one. You know, he earned a spot later in the season, all of that stuff. Like, and there's a lot of time for us still to discuss, I think, looking forward, like where his spot in the rotation is really going to be. But I think the template of what he's done, where it's a lot of shooting, it's a lot of coming off of screens, it's quick shots, it's not, you know, dribbling a couple, it's not even like dribbling into shots, it's really like he gets the ball in a handoff or a pass and he's firing. And like, that is a skill set you could see the Cavs having use for. And like, if it looks good, it will come good. I think the other part of it, yeah, Evan, is I think he looks just like very poised. And I think like you see him as a guy who, like, there's times where we see him on defense where, like, he's not going to get a steal. He's not going to get a deflection or anything, but, like, he's defending. Like, he'll be helping off of the corner the guy next to him a little bit, and he's keeping himself close enough and has his athleticism to recover if the ball gets swung to the corner and he's defending a drive from the corner, right? This is a guy that has the skills in that way that's going to make him, I think, someone you can look at as maybe a rotation guy for day one. It just, the template is very much here for what we're seeing from Agbaji.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, the template is here. The minutes factor, Spencer Davies from Basketball News had a report where he spoke with somebody at the Cavs organization that it kind of seems like it's just the general generic J.B. Bickerstaff mentality where, like, any player who's not named Garland, Mobley, or Allen has to earn minutes in this rotation next year. And Abaji is no stranger to that, like, but he provides a lot of things the Cavs need. He's a low usage 3-and-D wing at his offset. Like, he's more of an NBA ready player at 22 years old, obviously, as well. It's what Kobe Altman said, but there's a lot of good glimpse we're seeing in these first two games in Summer League, and I'm interested to see what he looks like when the games actually count and actually matter. But yeah, I think maybe 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes a night to start out his rookie career is probably a good place to kind of peg him. He's like the, not the back end of your rotation, maybe the thick of things off the bench for you. And kind of what you see in Summer League is maybe ways like the Cavs can utilize him. And it's exactly what J.B. Bickerstaff said too. Like, they want to use him on pin downs. They want to use him on cuts. They want to use him in motion. He could unlock things for the Cavs, maybe not right away, obviously, just because he's a rookie and he needs some time to adjust. But even with maturity and poise, like, he's going to need a little bit of space to grow and kind of get used to this level of ball too. But there's things he could do to unlock things for the Cavs offensively that they kind of haven't had at the wing spot in a while, just because Isaac Okoro just isn't a plus shooter. Jetty Osman's inconsistent, and Abaji could kind of tick a couple boxes. And I had a scout describe him to me as a guy who would be a team that he's a guy that a team would spend a good portion of their mid-level exception on to sign him to a long-term contract. Like, he kind of is that in that vein right now, and that's only at 22. So it's interesting to see where maybe that goes from here. But like, I've been quietly content with it, and I think the Cavs are too with just his production thus far.
Yeah, the one other thing I've liked about him is that I feel like he's always very aware. Like, there's very good court awareness. He plays with his head up when, like, if he gets a rebound, for instance, or he gets a steal, he's not, like, he will take a dribble or two, but he's not immediately, like, going and pushing the pace and trying to, like, get his own look via transition. He is, like, playing with his eyes up. He's seeing guys up the floor. And I think, like, that's just a guy who's going to come in and contribute to, like, with the system you have. He very much understands, Evan, I think, like, what he is, and I think, like, that gives him, that's an interesting place for him to start. It was interesting that some of the broadcast interviews can be sort of tricky and you don't always learn a lot. Yeah. I thought one of the most illuminating things GB Bickerstaff said in his was that he felt like it was like, look, you get a lot of these guys who are until a certain point are the best scorer on their team, right? Like, they're the best athlete on their team. Ochai has never really been that dude. And yeah, but he still succeeded in his role. And, like, I think there's something very admirable about that. And it sets a baseline, I think, of where and how we can think about him and where that pushes him and how that gets stretched and whatnot. And what his role sort of looks like will be really interesting to see in that context, in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. And in the context of just broadcast availability, I think Darius Garland just saying, like, this is his time, like, he needs to be shooting it as much as he can. Like, these are opportunities for Abaji to just kind of get comfortable playing with NBA caliber players. And also, to Garland's point, like, Abaji may not have the opportunity to take 10, 15 shots a night on these instances, but because the games will actually count at that point. But, like, during Summer League, these are important. Mike Garrity has been reported, according to Kelsey Russo, because she is on site in Vegas, that they just are encouraging him to keep shooting it. And I am interested to see what he is and what he will be. But he is very much an NBA-ready player out of the box, and we're kind of getting a lot of that too. And I do like his fit overall with Cleveland. I liked his fit the night of the draft. It's obviously not the sexiest pick in terms of, like, AJ Griffin just being the pick after him, but I like what Ochai Abaji brings to the table overall, and I'm more so just interested to see how he's utilized when the Cavs have, like, their full rotation and unit in place. Like, there's obviously the Sexton's question is looming. We'll talk about that later in the show, but Abaji could be an interesting piece just in however he's utilized in this rotation, whether it's towards the top end of things as a sixth man or possibly a starter, or is he the back end of the rotation to start things and he has to climb his way up the ladder.
Yeah, I think I'll be very interesting to see. But again, if you're looking for a takeaway for Abaji through two Summer League games, which again, I wouldn't describe a ton of like weight to some of what you see in some of these. Like they can be very fun and all that, but I think putting weight on these is tricky. Like seeing the way I think he's playing and what he's doing, I think is it's like I look at him versus some of the other guys we're seeing. I think like notably RJ Nembhard, and it's like what Agbaji is doing feels much more directly translatable to like his role on the Cavs versus what maybe Nembhard is doing and what his theoretical NBA fit could be. Like that to me is like the difference between some of that.
I somewhat agree with that. We can talk about Nembhard a little bit in the next segment if you want, because we're probably pressed for time and ads and everything. But Nembhard's giving me a little bit of juice here, and there's something there that I want to keep, like, I want to extrapolate on a little bit, but you have a word for our first sponsor.
Yes, we're going to put a pin in that. After the break, we're going to talk about Luke Travers, RJ Nembhard, Isaiah Mobley, and Amarcy, who's to me, Evan, been one of the fun surprises.
We were going to talk about him, Mr. Can't Miss, until he missed one. But
yes, we're going to do a little speed round on some other guys. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info this season. Find all of the latest sports developments, league reviews, news, and more, including the ongoing Major League Baseball season and NBA futures and boxing and MMA, all of that. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season, and really all seasons. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. For example, the Cavs are plus 10,000 to win the title next year as of right now. In the Coach of the Year odds, JB Bickerstaff is plus 2,500. And the Defensive Player of the Year race, Evan Mobley is at plus 1,600, while Jared Allen is plus 2,500. There's other Cavs-related odds there as well if you're so interested, plus all of the other great stuff. That's BetOnline, where the game starts. Check them out at BetOnline.net. All right, we're back here in Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damerill. Evan, let's do a little speed round on the Summer League through two games. We were talking about RJ Nembhard before we went into break. Cavs two-way player, 6'5 wing from TCU, was on the two-way contract last year, but really was primarily a depth piece for Cleveland, only 14 games in the G League. What have you liked and not liked from Nembhard so far from what we've seen in two games in Vegas?
What I have liked is kind of what you saw with him with the Charge, where he is a pretty solid like point forward for the Cavs. Is how the Charge tried to utilize him. I think that's how the Cavs kind of want to mold him a little bit too. Obviously, not play small forward or be in part of the rotation. Like I tweeted this out. Like I was just saying, like he's not going to crack Cleveland's rotation, but he could have the potential to be one of those players where he looks like he's just like a case above or a class above some of these guys on the floor that are maybe gunning for it. And he also has the luxury of being on a two-way deal and the Cavs liking him. But Nembhard could be in that similar vein to, like I keep saying this, guys like Dean Wade, guys like Lamar Stevens, guys that could be good, not great. Maybe Nembhard's case, he's a little closer to great just based on what he can provide, but he's not a plus shooter. I mean, yes, he's shooting it well in the summer league play right now, but he's not shooting it a ton. He wasn't a great shooter at TCU. It's part of why he went undrafted. But I think Nembhard is showing me a little bit of juice here, where like the Cavs could shut him down and say like, okay, we've seen enough of RJ. Let's look at some of the other guys, whether it's Ashton Hagans, whether it's Cam Young, whether it's insert other players here. But Nembhard has looked solid enough to me where I say like, okay, if like you said, he hardly played at the Charge, and but when he did, he had like averages like he's having in summer league right now. But he is just looking more comfortable out there. I think him saying like he doesn't have much to prove and he just wants to show the Cavs that like he is worth the commitment, like I think he is showing that a little bit. And at least starting the conversation for me to say, at least, like, maybe you don't obviously convert his contract into, like, a non-guaranteed Kobe Altman special, but he could, like, if he keeps this up and you kind of call on him and lean on him at times, like, he could be a dude who pushes Raul Neto out of the rotation. He could be, like, that third point guard in the rotation
when Ricky Rubio's
healthy.
Yeah.
But,
we disagree there. I don't think that's what his role is. I think
Not his role right out the gates, but, like,
no,
if he continues
even,
this momentum, like, maybe just having the added luxury of having a year in familiarity with the Cavs, like, maybe he does push the Cavs a little bit to maybe make a decision. Like, okay, maybe we don't keep him on a two-way deal. We convert his contract and we keep him with just the main club.
Yeah, I think
that's the conversation I'm making. Yeah. That's the hope, obviously. But
yeah, I don't think it's pushing Nato or Rubio. I think it's just pushing like Windler and Jetty. And like if you move on from those guys, or you need like actual wing depth. I just don't think his role in the NBA, if he's ever going to stick, is going to be a dude who plays with the ball in his hands as much as he is in the G League or in Summer League. That's just not how that's going to work. That's just
he can provide you playmaking at the wing spot. Sure, like, that's not a bad thing. Yeah.
No, it's not a bad thing, but it's like in a world where you have Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Colin Sexton, maybe Caris LeVert. Like, his role is just going to look different.
Chris, let's move on to Luke. What? Are you announcing Sexton's back?
No, I'm not. Let's move on to Luke Travers, who, Evan, has been to me, behind Abaji, I think my second favorite guy to watch in Summer League, because I have found him very much in need of physical growth, which is the thing when you ask anyone from the team about him and talk to draft experts about him. That was the thing where it's like, this guy needs like an NBA American style weightlifting program. But I think you look at him and he's a guy that is, I think, been very positionally solid, very plays at a pace that is very much his own, and he stays very consistent in that pace. He doesn't get too hurried or too slow. I think he's just like, and he's just like making plays, even though it doesn't always look like he has the athleticism to really do it. I like how he plays. Obviously, the shot is a big concern. The strength thing has to improve. He's clearly not ready to be in the NBA right now, but I've liked a lot of what we've seen from the do-it-allness of Travers. And that pick, and like, again, we have to see what he looks like in the NBL for another year. We have to see what he looks like with more strength and all of that. He's been, to me, again, the second most interesting guy behind Abaji.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely the second most interesting player on the roster for the Cavs. Like, obviously, I got a few texts from people that are in Vegas, like, who's the guy in the Cavs uniform with the mullet? I'm like, Luke Travers, Billy from Stranger Things. But other than that, yeah, he's just been really fun. Like, he's been playing a lot of the hustle plays. I think, like you said, athletically, like, he doesn't stick out. Like, he's not athletically refined. I don't know what his absolute ceiling is, but like you said, and like people have said, him getting in a proper NBA strength and conditioning program would be really beneficial for him. I know the plan is for him now is to return to the NBA at least for another year, and then the Cavs will broach this subject next year with him, and maybe he's a lot different of a player than too, because he's still pretty young in the grand scheme of things as well. Like, he has a lot of untapped potential, but when he was talking to media, he said, like, a player, like, just Australian-wise that he models his game after is Joe Ingles. Like, you kind of get those vibes, or, like, he's a bigger wing who can rebound the ball. He provides passing and just, like, hustles plays like that, too. Like, the shot could be there. It still needs – it's a work in progress. Like, the scoring is still a work in progress for him, too. But, like, there's a good foundation, and he's definitely stuck out, and I think he's just made the most of this opportunity to at least tell the Cavs, like, hey, this may not happen this year, but next year, if he comes back to Vegas and does something very similar and he has a strong season at the NBL, like, we have to have a conversation about Luke Travers joining the Cavaliers at that point, whether it's on a two-way deal or like a partially guaranteed contract where like he's the back end of the rotation. But like, it's a talk we gotta have, and like, he's playing really well and it's been fun to watch.
Yes, I think we'll have to try to find someone to come on and update us throughout the season on his NBL updates. Two other guys we need to hit on really quickly: Isaiah Mobley, who I think was much better in game one than in game two, but you can see the feel for the game. He's got the willingness to shoot threes, willingness to put the ball on the floor and push. There's definitely, I think, something interesting there from what we've seen. But I think, Evan, the guy that I want to just hit on is Amarcia, who was the guy. He played 5 minutes in Summer League last year. I don't know, like, if he's going to end up with the Charge or whatever. I think that would be kind of the hope.
Lithuanian club BC Nevėžis, and I did a little bit of a deep dive on him prior to Summer League, and he averaged 11.5 points, 7.7 rebounds, 2.1 blocks per game. He's a 4-5 over in Europe, and I think he'd likely would end up back overseas, but like, he's played really well, like you said. Like, he's really stuck out as just like a high energy athletic big man who has like a good motor to his game. Like, he seems like he's constantly engaged on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, he's very much an inside player. He's 20 years old, very skinny. If this was a guy that, again, like, you're right, he's playing overseas, but if you could get him like in your program in the G League, like, that's the kind of guy that I think could be really interesting in that setting. But he's been a ton of energy, running the floor, making plays. Like, he's doing stuff, and he's kind of been the guy most consistently that has popped for me. Like, I don't think he's necessarily, like, he's not even the best. He's obviously, I think, not the best prospect on this team. But, like, I wouldn't, like, huh. There's enough that has been interesting where I'm just, like,
there's a lot of guys.
I'm aware of this dude now, and I wasn't, and that's sometimes the fun of
summer league. Summer League last year, but he signed a two-way, or at least a training camp deal, then I think a two-way contract with Cleveland. But he played for the Heat last year in Vegas, and he popped enough to the Cavs, like, dang, this is a guy that kind of fits the mold of a player J.B. Bickerstaff kind of wants to grow and develop, and then maybe, like, a back-end guy we want to grow and develop, too. But, yeah.
Well, that was the that was the Kyle Guy thing as well, because Kyle Guy was, like, amazing with the Warriors in Summer League, was on their bench in Summer League, and then ended up with the Charge for most of the year, and then was with the Miami Heat for a spell in the NBA, and I don't even know if he's playing for them, but that was the Kyle Guy thing as well. His Wikipedia page is listed.
Sia stood out for sure.
You know, Wikipedia. I'm not going to 100%
a lot of energy, a lot of hustle. I think he's just a player like you keep tabs on. Maybe like the Cavs just form a good working relationship with him, and if he does want to leave the Lithuanian club he's with, and he wanted to join Cleveland, like, that'd be a fun prospect for the Cavs to kind of grow and develop with. Down with the Charge. It's a lot different than Fiondu Kabengele, that's for sure. Just like, there's interesting things here. On the Isaiah Mobley hitter, I think you see maybe why he was a second-round prospect. I think he has a propensity to foul right now. I think, like, maybe the lack of athleticism just compared to his brother is a little bit of a thing, too. But, like, there's a lot of interesting stuff. The playmaking, the shooting, the rebounding, obviously. Like, defensively at times, like, he does look really good. But, like, he is a work in progress. But I think he is a good investment for the Cavs as, like, a possible, like, quality backup big long term for them, and like, he's shown, like, just a lot of interesting things. You're like, oh yeah, that's pretty fun. Like, the Cavs have drafted three of their four rookies that are playing. Like, they're all have done some fun things for them two games in summer league play. Yeah, hey man, Otaka falls with the Jazz. Sorry, but like, yeah, there's a lot of former Cavaliers
actually with the Celtics in summer league.
Summer league right now, and it's fun times. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Justin Kabengele.
Do you think the Browns front office...
Miles Garrett also showed up at the Cavs, like, summer league game, had a camera on the sidelines, and looked absolutely yoked in the summer league jersey.
Because he was attempting ducks at, like, during the pregame warm-ups. Like, I thought he wasn't allowed to do that anymore, but, like, I'm here for the content. It's great for me.
I mean, I personally... Yeah. Just sitting on the sidelines next to Darius Garland, just, like, hanging out. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, obviously, like, stress fuel anytime, dude. All right, after the break, though, we're going to talk about Colin Sexton and the latest slash not latest in him, because there's not really any movement
from over the weekend on his situation. This episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Rock Auto.
But Evan is first going to tell everyone about our friends at Rock Auto.
It is now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why are often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts in their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the same parts from the chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is also a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and they have everything you can need from brake parts, tail lamp, motor oil, and even new carpet. So, go to rockauto.com right now and explore their easy-to-use website and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com. It's not much to talk about.
All right, we're back. Chris Manning, Evan Dammel here. Let's talk about Colin Sexton, Evan. So, there's nothing... So there's nothing new.
Same.
We don't have any inclinations as of right now. I poked around this weekend. There's nothing really that has moved here. I think that where we are at with this is that these two sides are staring at each other waiting for like the waiting to like for one side to blink, one side to make a move. So Evan, I want to frame it in this way. I have just a question I want to ask about this, because this is, I think, been a point of conversation and seeing people talk about this on Al Gore's internet. When you look at Colin Sexton's situation, can you see a scenario? And I want to be very clear about this. I don't think this is where this is at right now, and I don't think it's close to that. But could you see a scenario
if a long-term contract is worth less than the qualifying offer? Actually, makes sense for him. I actually had a reader on Write Down Euclid ask me this for the mailbag, and at least from my perspective, if you were Colin Sexton, you were staring down the barrel of a 4 to 5 year contract with the Cavs last offseason. You declined it. You bet on yourself. Unfortunately, you tore your meniscus and were out for the remainder of the season. And there are other factors outside your control, whether it's the Cavs winning without you or the Cavs possibly making the playoffs without you. Like, there's a lot of factors that just weren't in play for you. It's unfortunate, but I, like you said, you sniffed around on this. I sniffed around on this. I don't know if the qualifying offer is necessarily in play. I think it's definitely going to be like a back pocket option if you're calling in his camp at clutch. But at the same time, like, you have to take into consideration, like, how much are you willing to let this go out? And if you're the Cavs, like, how comfortable are you will to let this drag out? Because, like you said, it is a stare off at this point. Whoever blinks first, whether it's Colin's camp, whether it's the Cavs side of things, like, they're still working towards that middle ground on what number financially is acceptable for both sides. Chris Fedor's reported it, multiple people have reported it, I think Mark Stein reported it as well. Like, the market just doesn't exist for Colin anymore. It dried up around him, another factor outside of his control. And I just don't think a team necessarily wants to take that gamble on a guy who hasn't really played in a winning situation like the Cavs have right now. And there's a lot of factors at play that you have to, like, give you pause and give you question on things. And you're just kind of taking that into consideration. Like, I know I've been on the record multiple times saying I'd rather have Colin Sexton than Caris LeVert right now, but, like, at $20 million plus, that gives me pause. Like, if you're paying Colin Sexton, Caris LeVert money, that you could sell me on the idea of it based on how the contract's structured. But at the same time, like, I don't know how much higher I'm willing to go, and clearly the Cavs don't want to go much higher either, because they don't want to be in the luxury tax either when it comes to paying Colin Sexton. So, like, there's just a lot of factors at play. To answer your question, just again, I don't know what the qualifying offer, if that's really I know what it is. I just don't know if it's a serious option if you're calling right now. And I think you're trying to get down to the brass tacks and find an agreeable contract that gets you more guaranteed money and kind of keeps you here. And then maybe if you're the Cavs at that point and Colin, like, you quietly, like, find a trade after you sign him to an agreeable RFA contract, like, down the line to let him rebuild his image with guaranteed money in his back pocket, and then maybe, like, you find a more agreeable situation if you don't think this is tenable long term either. I don't think any bridges have been burned necessarily, but also it's just you have to question, like, his overall fit in the grand scheme of things too, just especially with how much money you're willing to commit to him financially.
So he's, if he took the qualifying, $7.2 million. That's not what I think he's hoping for. That is below what I think the Cavs would, I think that's below, frankly, what the Cavs would view him as, like, a year-to-year guy. If, let's just say the Jordan Clarkson contract, which Jake Fisher has reported is one of the, like, roughly kind of what the Cavs had offered, something similar. That paid Clarkson, like, 12.5 per year, started 11.5, went up to 12.4, went to 13.3. He's going to make $14 million this year with the Jazz. A little bit older, obviously, a little more of a known quantity. I think Colin's argument, I think very fairly, is, look, I've been more efficient than Clarkson has been. Number two, I also just have more upside because I'm younger and all of this stuff. And I understand that argument. I think where I look at this, Evan, is I just can't – guys just don't take the qualifying offer. And the Cavs kind of have Colin in a very tricky situation right now because the market just isn't there. And, you know, the Spurs or the Pacers, like, these teams haven't – the two teams with cap space haven't come calling. The Cavs don't have an obligation as an organization to like facilitate a trade just for the sake of it, because they kind of have to figure this out. And I think one of the things we'll do this week is like look at the last several years of Cavs extending or not extending rookie contract guys, and kind of see if there's what we can learn from that. Because Garland obviously got the max, but you know, like other things haven't gone that way, and they also haven't had picks in some years. So there's something to dig into there. I just can't imagine from Colin's side that unless I don't think it's even close to like a consideration, because that to me is the option. You say this has gotten so bad, this has gotten so not like we're never going to agree to something, that I'm just going to say
no,
screw it, I'm betting on myself, and I'm going to take much, much less money with no safety net. Because at the very least, you could like look at the Clarkson contract or something that is like a little bit more, like starts at 13, starts at 14 and goes up. You at least like if it's like 13 a year or like 14 a year to start, I think he's probably worth a little bit more than that. I think he definitely wants more than that. That's like double the qualifying offer.
It is. And I think let's say it's 15 million is the starting point, and it's on a scale and it slides up, and maybe somehow the Cavs load it with some incentives too, where like if you hit these certain milestones like X, Y, or Z, like let's say he does become their pseudo six man off the bench, and like let's say like he wins six man of the year, like there's those types of financial like nets that he could like possibly hit, or financial points he can possibly hit where he can like get bonuses in certain ways. But like, yeah, I think the Clarkson contract is a good template, but you have to maybe just adjust it to what he is as a player, and also just financially where the league is at as well. And I think the Cavs could get Colin to come around on it. And like you said, like the scary uncertainty of just the market already being barren to begin with, like teams that do have cap space, whether it's the Spurs or the Pacers, just are not calling for him either. Even though like the Pacers were a team that I thought I thought might have interest, but like the Pacers just pivoted and looked elsewhere. There are just two interesting scenarios. I think if you're Collins camp, maybe you're hoping for a lifeline where like a team just kind of comes out of left field and extends him a qualifying offer that the Cavs just, or an offer sheet that the Cavs don't necessarily either feel comfortable matching, or the Cleveland does match, and like it just kind of ties them up a little bit more financially. But the Cavs are keeping a pretty clean cap sheet right now. Like they made the right moves. They signed Ricky Rubio to part of their mid-level exception, which is financially what they're able to do and keep them underneath the salary cap. They signed Lopez and Neto to vet min deals, which makes a lot of sense. They signed their two ways properly with Isaiah Mobley and RJ Nembhard. Now the Sexton Domino is the last one to fall, and this could drag out for a while. It could be resolved tomorrow, but it could also drag out for weeks. I wouldn't say months, but like leading up the training camp kind of situation, and then it might be hits a resolution. But like you said, I just don't think if you're Collins camp, you do the qualifying offer. And what Jake Fisher reported does make a lot of sense financially what you do, and you maybe use that as like a baseline template, but you adjust it accordingly just based on what Sexton is as a player and just kind of how the market is shaking out, like how you pay these guys appropriately. Like maybe it's a mixture of like what Terry Rozier has paid with the Hornets and what Jordan Clarkson got paid initially in his extension.
Yeah, what this, I think the overlying thing to me here, the big takeaway from this is that this feels like the Cavs trying to maximize their leverage in this situation. That is what this is to me.
As they should, and as Collins camp should as well, and maximizing his financial opportunities too. Like it's how negotiations work.
Well, yes, but it's also just like if you want an explanation as to like why this is where it's at and why it's like the Cavs are saying, look, we want to get this at the best price possible, and this isn't just like a no-brainer thing. And you can feel how you want about that. Mm-hmm. You could get mad and say like, oh, Sexton's great, all this stuff. And I think Sexton's a very good player. But if this was a no-brainer, give him, we want to keep him situation for the Cavs, you pay him and you figure it out. That's not what has happened here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that should, if you're being rational about this, I think that tells you something. And you, again, people can feel how they want about it. It is July 10th as we're recording this. It is July 11th as you're listening to this or watching this on YouTube. Colin Sexton is not signed, and it's the same thing with DeAndre Ayton. It's just like these weird situations, and being an RFA in 2022 is a very tricky place to be. The market isn't there, and I would bet if I had to bet today if he's on the Cavs or not next year, I would say it's definitely more likely than not that he is. Mm-hmm. I just don't know like how exactly that happens and what that looks like at this point. It's sort of unclear based on what information you can get from reading other people, you can get from talking to people about it. It is just unclear about how this ultimately plays out as we're recording this, even if it feels like the logical endpoint is Colin Sexton's playing for the Cavs to start at the beginning of next season.
Yeah, I remain confident that Colin Sexton will be playing for the Cavs. Like you said, I still don't know what capacity his contract will look like. I don't think the Cavs would do all this public lip service if they didn't want to bring Colin back. It's just you got to find the right price, like you said. And that's just the trickiness and the murkiness of it is teams outside of Cleveland have made it publicly known like how they feel about Colin. Like there weren't teams like running up the tripping over themselves like fighting each other to sign him in restricted free agency just in general just because of how tricky the Cavs situation was financially. But at the same time, like just I think other teams like Detroit pivoting and just absorbing a lot of the Knicks bad contracts for future picks and Jalen Duren is probably the right move for them instead of maybe making like a win now signing like it is with Sexton. But and now it's negotiations. We have to figure out what the next steps are and just kind of see what happens from here, you know?
Yeah, no idea.
No, who knows? It's uncharted waters, and we will talk about it when it happens. But until then, like, the Sexton question is just kind of wait and see. And like Chris said, like, you need to be rational about this. I don't think there's, like, some, like, grand conspiracy in conjunction with the media and the Cavs just, like, downplay Sexton's value or things like that.
Cavs deep state?
There's no Cavs deep state. Like, some of the Sexton truthers with their tinfoil hats try to lead on for you, but he was never going to sign the max contract. That was never financially a thing. Maybe there's going to be some hurt feelings. I don't think he's jealous Darius got a max contract. Like, I saw that conspiracy out there too, but it's not that deep. Spencer German actually asked me when he tweeted, would you rather have Caris LeVert or Colin Sexton? And I tweeted the Joker gif. He's like, do you know something? I'm like, no, I was just ripping Chris. That's all it was at the end of the day. It's not that serious. So we'll see what happens. I for one would never mess with Chris Manning normally, but we'll see what happens. And
that's a lie.
Yeah, it's locked on liars right now. But
we'll
touch in on Sexton from time to time. But for now, I think it's just going to be a standoff until one party blinks, and then the other one kind of capitalizes on that momentum.
Yes, so we will be back tomorrow. If something happens with Sexton, we'll do that. I think what we're going to do, Evan, is I'm springing this on you now, but we're going to do, because there's no Summer League games for us to talk about, we're going to look at specifically the Cavs' past negotiations with Clutch, because that is something they've done a lot of. And guess what? Tristan Thompson ran for a long time. J.R. Smith ran for a long time, and everything with LeBron also could ran for a long time.
The problem is the Cavs, or at least for Clutch and Colin Sexton, they do not have one LeBron James to put public pressure on the Cavs.
Yeah, there are some differences there, but I think we're going to look at those, and then on Wednesday, I think we should look at how, because Kobe, the thing that's unique about the Cavs is that when they've changed over general managers, so like they went from Kobe to, or from Griff David to Griffin to Kobe, that wasn't like they hired someone from the organization, they promoted from within. So there's like, Kobe was around for all of this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't maybe the final guy pulling the lever, but he was around. So I think there is something we can glean from that. So we're going to do like a 2-day dive into like past Cavs stuff to see if there's anything we can learn. And it's July. We're trying to figure stuff out. And we have 2 days off of Summer League. So we have a busy week still ahead.
Got to make 5 episodes a week somehow.
That's correct. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. I'm Chris. That's Evan. If you want a great second listen today, check out Locked on NBA. It's your daily dose of everything going on in the NBA in just 30 minutes. So check them out today on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris. That's Evan. Be well and enjoy Summer League when it comes back on Wednesday.